We,
Sonia,
and Janooni are a couple of pals studying science in undergrad. We are not professionals.
Though every episode is meticulously researched, mistakes do happen.
If you notice that anything...
And we mean anything!
We state is inaccurate, please let us know.
Your comments, suggestions, and queries are important in furthering our personal and audience's understanding of science.
Thanks for being a part of this discussion.
We appreciate you.
We really do.
Bop bop. Beep it up bop.
Howdy ho, Janooni.
Howdy ho, Sonia. I love
Have
that.
Have you ever watched South Park?
Mm-mm.
No?
My brother's a big fan, but
a little while ago, there used to be Mr. Hanky, the Christmas Pooh.
Okay.
And he used to go, howdy ho, everybody.
That's it?
Oh, they would say more with the intro, but that's where the howdy ho thing came from. Ask your brother if you remember.
I'll just go up to him and be like, howdy ho.
What are you saying?
As you can see, I have a green juice.
Oh, interesting. Where'd you get that from?
Revitasize. They're having a buy one, get $1 smoothie this month.
Okay.
So I bought one.
Mm-hmm.
And got one for $1. I was going to say, like, the green color of my drink, today's episode is quite green.
Oh, wow. Great transition. That's right, everybody. Today, we're talking about Green Day. No, not the band. I mean the world as in Earth Day. That's right, everybody. On April 22nd.
Yeah.
Yep, April 22nd is Earth Day. The day where we celebrate Mother Earth and all her greenery and vivaciousness. And
we stand the queen.
We stand Queen Earth.
Anyways, in case you didn't know, what is Earth Day besides, you know, celebrating Queen Earth? So I'm pretty sure a lot of viewers might know that, like, every year on April 22nd, we celebrate Earth Day. There's various, like, times where you turn off the lights, I know.
I remember in elementary school, it used to be, like, Earth Hour, so we'd only do it for an hour. But then some people are bold, they go above and beyond, and they do the whole day, which I think is, like, the intention of the thing.
Yeah, it's not too bad, especially since it's, like, really bright outside usually during the day, so... Hey guys, do that. Anyways, Earth Day was actually first celebrated on April 22nd, 1970. This was actually not like globally. This is, it was solely in America, like the United States, where 20 million Americans, so about like 10% of the population at the time, took to the streets and they started protesting against environmental ignorance. The credit for this major event actually goes to U.S. Senator Nelson, who rallied the support of people regarding this pressing issue. So climate change and biodiversity loss. As a result, environment and earth conservation became a topic of discussion on a national level. So like after several years of like getting support from activists across the globe. So 20 years later, Earth Day actually went global. So in 1990, what specifically happened was a group of environmental leaders approached activist Dennis Hayes approached Dennis Hayes to organize a major campaign for the planet. So he initially actually did teaching events at colleges for educating about Earth Day and all that stuff. So basically global leaders came to this activist person and was like, hey, can you make another one? And so this time Earth Day actually went global. It's about 20 million people in over 141 countries came together and were lifting environmental issues and bringing it, raising awareness for this. So that's amazing. And also Earth Day 1990 gave a huge boost to recycling efforts worldwide and helped pave the path for the 1992 United Nations Earth Summit. Yeah. It was also really cool was that in 2016 on Earth Day, they several countries around the world agreed to legally bind the climate deal at the Paris Climate Conference. So that's fun.
Mm-hmm. Countries did back out, but then now they've joined back in. Or some of them have.
I'm glad for those countries.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Basically, like, Earth Day is really about raising awareness about climate change and biodiversity loss and all that, all the bad stuff that's happening to our environment and to our Earth, to the place that we live in. So in our part of celebrating Earth Day and bringing and raising awareness, we're going to actually dedicate part of this episode into talking about biodiversity loss and climate change. So
yeah, I guess I'll take it away from there. Really quickly before I do, though, looking at when Earth Day originally started, so in the early 1970s, that was really when, like, the whole environmentalism movement kicked off. And a lot of, not a lot of people, but a lot of people, what am I trying to say? A lot of people attribute to the, like, the start of this movement to people like Rachel Carson, who is a well-known biologist. She also wrote the book Silent Spring, which really kickstarted the whole environmentalism movement because of everything that was happening with DDT, so that pesticide that was causing a lot of problems in habitat loss and biodiversity loss, which is something we're going to be talking about right now. So I guess just to give a really quick overall summary of what biodiversity is. So basically, biodiversity describes the enormous variety and variability of biological life around us. So that's a bit of a convoluted definition, but to be more specific, it basically serves as a measure that indicates species and genetic variation within an ecosystem. So looking at the amount of different species. So if there was only one type of organism or one type of species in an environment, that would be indicative of a lack of biodiversity. When there's a lot of different species of plants and animals, that's when there's an abundance of biodiversity. But anyways, so though we often hear these, like, if you turn on the news, like to CNN or something like that, you can often hear, like, weird stories of different species being discovered all around the world, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever, like, popped on National Geographic or CNN and you see an article saying that, oh, 15 new species have been discovered in 2020. I don't know if you've ever seen anything like that.
I've seen, like, a new fish that was discovered, and it, like, mm-hmm. it was, like, translucent kind of thing. Ooh. Crazy shit I've ever seen. I gotta say.
Wild. Wild. Crazy shit I've ever seen. That's funny. But even though we often see a lot of those articles, what's actually happening is that due to human activities that lead to land use changes, and like we were talking about before, human-caused climate change, there's a lot more species around the world that are at risk of extinction. And basically right now, the Earth is at risk of mass biodiversity loss because right now we're living in an era known as the Holocene extinction. And okay. This Holocene extinction basically describes the fact that Earth is living during a time where ever since humans started to pop up and start creating emerged from the ground, but started creating, like, civilizations and stuff like that, and started producing a lot of waste and all that kind of stuff. It's contributed a lot to climate change and habitat destruction, which is freaking wild. But what's even more wild is that species today are vanishing at a rate 1,000 times higher than before humans ever existed. In fact, more than 99.9% of all species that have ever lived on Earth, which is estimated to be over 5 billion, which is insane, 99.9% of those are thought to be extinct
today. 99?
99.9% of all species that have ever lived on Earth are thought to be extinct. And during this era... Yeah, and during this era of human existence, species are vanishing and going extinct 1,000 times higher than before they did when humans weren't around.
I'm curious on how they, like, are able to go about and, like, finding this information. So I think it's amazing how science has kind of, like, evolved to, like, knowing things even before we were on this planet.
There's a TikTok that I'm not really one with the TikTok, but you know Hank Green, the guy that so Hank Green did a TikTok explaining that. You know, I'll link it in the references for this because he explains it better than I do, but there's basically, like, a bunch of different ways that scientists study whether or not, like, a species is extinct, mm-hmm. and like how they know like things exist in a certain yeah. habitat, and all like I'll, we'll put in the reference stuff. It's yeah. a very simple explanation of that.
Okay.
But yeah, moving on, I guess. Among, I guess, the millions of species that are essentially vanishing right now as a result of human activity are those that facilitate pollination. So pollination is something you may have learned back in like grade 10 science, or you might have learned in elementary school. But just to give a brief summary of what pollinators are and what pollination is and why they're so important to this conversation. Simply put, pollination is basically a process where pollen grains are transferred from one flower to another. So it's basically just moving like seeds in order to allow them to reproduce, mm-hmm. I guess. But this process can either be facilitated through self-pollination. So the pollen is basically carried by wind and water,
oh,
or
yeah.
through the work of vectors known as pollinators.
Mm-hmm.
So these pollinators include a wide variety of organisms like birds, bats, bees, butterflies, beetles, and other small organisms. And as pollinators visit flowers, they basically move pollen from flower to flower to flower,
yeah.
to help plants reproduce, right? Like I was saying before. And as I guess summary, pollination is basically an ecological service that is crucial to sustaining biodiversity by enabling plant reproduction and preventing species extinction.
Okay, now that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, so basically right now, just to give a brief summary of what we've spoken about, we have an understanding of what biodiversity is, an understanding of the roles of pollinators, and how they, I guess, relate to climate change.
Okay, yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah,
because a lot of this is being caused by human activities, like human-induced climate change, habitat disruption, all that kind of fun stuff.
We're taking right? away the bees' homes.
Yep. So we are making bees homeless.
Oh my god.
It is a bee genocide.
It is. Oh my god.
Anyways, moving on from that. Not a lot. That was a horrible transition.
That was so sad. Anyways, more about the bee genocide, Sonia.
Yeah. So I guess now that we've basically developed a fundamental understanding of these topics relating to biodiversity and pollinators, I guess we still have the remaining question. Right, this overall question is, I guess, what is the implications and the relationship between biodiversity loss and pollinators?
I'm sure everyone at home was thinking about that question.
These are the questions we ask ourselves. Why are we talking about this today? Well, let
Sonia drop some knowledge.
Let me drop the knowledge. Let me go off, as the kids say. Alrighty. Well, I guess, as a way to put it, pollination is arguably one of the most vital mechanisms involved in the maintenance of biodiversity, because like I said before, it facilitates flowering like the plant reproduction. Flowering plant reproduction.
Yes.
It's not like it's for flowers specifically, but anyways, I'll keep going. So I guess
it is specifically for flowers, or it's not?
It's for plant? Flowers. It's
okay, for flower. Okay. For
flowers, yeah. Flowering plant reproduction, yeah.
Okay. So
I guess as like a global implication, aside from threatening many of the world's ecosystems and habitats and all that kind of fun stuff, pollinator declines may also jeopardize food security. So globally, 87 of the world's major crop varieties depend on these like vector pollinators for pollination.
Oh, right? Wow.
So, which accounts for about 35% of the world's food production volume.
Okay.
Yeah. So like if we didn't have these, you know, bumblebees and all that kind of stuff, if they continue to go extinct as a result of like human induced climate change and I guess overall biodiversity loss.
Yeah.
The global food, this can vastly contribute to starvation around the world and promote famines, because if the main crops, if 35% of the world's food production is reduced or taken away because we don't have these pollinators, a lot of people are going to starve.
Damn. People are not going to have their cherry tomatoes for the TikTok pasta.
They're not going to have those cherry tomatoes. They're not going to have, you know, isn't there like the place where people go to take pictures in a sunflower field? Like people aren't going to be able to take their Instagram photos.
Yeah, you're going to be at home with your white wall.
Yep. I was going to say, well, my room is like a weird beige color, but
close enough.
Yeah, but I guess like if you want to look at it from an economic perspective, because maybe starvation isn't something that like rings a bell for you. The global production of crops that depend on pollinators is an industry worth about $577 billion US annually and is responsible for the millions of jobs around the world.
Oh my god.
So $577 billion
US. And a million jobs?
Well, millions of jobs.
Oh, millions. Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, think of like all the farmers that are like planting these flowering plants, right?
Yeah.
Like they'll be out of business, right?
We stan our farmers too.
Yeah. We absolutely do.
A lot of money gone.
Yeah. But currently, I guess just to move, like to continue this conversation. Currently, the abundance and I guess the well-being of pollinators is being jeopardized by things like land use changes, intensive agricultural practices, invasive species, pesticide use. So going back earlier when we were talking about Rachel Carson and DDT, like DDT isn't really around anymore, but like still other pesticides and arguably most destructively human-induced climate change. Like all of these things are contributing to overall biodiversity loss and the extinction of pollinator species. And even like, despite all of this, right, despite all that's going on, scientists have tried to replicate the process of pollination through, I guess, various manned and robotic interventions. So by making like drones and stuff like that to try to facilitate the pollination process. But it's been largely unsuccessful because it's either been too expensive, too labor intensive, and all that kind of stuff. So bees, we can't take their jobs. Like AI is not taking bees' jobs. Like, they can't do anything about it.
They are not replaceable.
No, they're not. They are essential doctors, workers.
Yes. Lawyers, yes. But bees,
no. In the context of looking at pollinators such as bumblebees, then other pollinators, I guess, one of the most stark examples of the widespread loss we're currently experiencing was recently reported by researchers at the University of Ottawa and University College London. So go Canada and go our fellow England neighbors.
Her Majesty. Is it Her Majesty?
It's Her Majesty. Go Her Majesty. But,
So Her Majesty.
They found that areas heavily impacted by climate change saw significant declines in bumblebee populations. So, and what's even more startling, in fact, is that in just one generation, the likelihood of bumblebee populations surviving in a given place had declined by more than 30% because of freaking climate change killing those bees. Yep, and this paper, by the way, as like an aside, it took into account factors like land use changes, intensive agricultural practices, stuff like that, and was solely looking at the implications of climate change, human-induced climate change on bumblebee populations. So in case you're thinking, well, other things could have caused it, it wasn't like climate change, no, like this article specifically.
You're wrong,
Yeah, they thought of that. But anyways, so papers like this suggest that if human-caused climate change progresses, we may face a future with fewer pollinators and ultimately far less biodiversity.
That's not good.
It's not good. And widespread widespread famine and environmental degradation may ultimately push humanity towards an unfathomable future. We gonna die because the bees are dying.
Hashtag save the bees.
Can't see it in the audio, but I'm doing the hashtag sign with my fingers.
I know a lot of our foods are like made by the bees and stuff. Like I remember once I saw like this graphic, basically like, you don't care about the bees, blah, blah, blah. Like this is what you would not have if you didn't have the bees. Like it was like a picture of a grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And God, that was a lot.
Yeah. Like I said, like 35% of the crops. And it's not like the little like stupid ones that no one eats. No, it's like the big ones that people eat. Like
we need cherry tomatoes.
Yeah. We need. Oh, I said that weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, so back on track though. This all sounds pretty depressing. You can't see it right now, but I'm sad. Like I am
crying.
Yep. I'm having a very sad face right now. But with that, like it's depressing because it essentially sounds like we're barreling towards this all of this uncertainty if we don't mitigate like our all these destructive practices that we're doing right now. So once again, it begs the question, what can be done to prevent the extinction of pollinators and biodiversity? Janune, I want to hear your input on that first. What can we do to save the planet, to save Queen Earth?
Well, I think the first and foremost, celebrate Earth Day. You can do this by turning off your lights for an hour or for the whole day.
Just keep like, them off forever. Go off the grid.
Yeah. Like, honestly, to run away, leave your phone at. That is how you can help.
Imagine, like, the 6-year-old comes across this audio. What do you do to save the planet? Leave home.
Mom, I'm leaving. Because the two girls on the podcast told me to leave.
I'm saving the planet.
Ooh, fun. You can stop using plastic water bottles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually, this is a paper straw. Oh, I'm drinking something. This is plastic. A paper straw.
Like, in all honesty, though, like, it's very funny. But in all honesty for our viewers, like, there's, at the end of the day, like, even though it sounds good, oh, like, let's stop using single-use plastic. That's very important. It is absolutely necessary. Genuinely good that you're using a recycled straw. But there is a lot more that needs to be done.
Oh, shit.
God dang it. We need to, we gotta do, I don't know what I was gonna say.
But you gotta plant some trees?
Mm-hmm.
You can donate money, actually, to help plant trees.
Mm-hmm.
We can pop that link down below.
Yeah, we will. There's a lot of good organizations out there.
What else can we do, Sonia?
Well, from the little research that I've done, essentially, it basically requires a lot of radical changes. Like, much needs to be done by various stakeholders, not just by us individuals, but by a lot of people. Like, we need a turn on not our
all
caps.
Teslas.
Yeah. So I didn't really hear what you said. I just heard Tesla.
Yeah, so not all of us can buy one.
Yeah, not of all. No. Like, no. I have $397 in my bank account right now. $3? We all can't afford. Pardon?
Did you say $3.97?
$3.97.
I'll put in a nice $1.08.
$1.08?
Yeah.
$1.08?
Eight? 8 cents.
Oh, okay. $1.08. Sorry, but back on topic here. Basically, with all these radical changes, there a lot needs to be done. So there was published by the Breakthrough National Center for Climate Restoration in Melbourne, which is basically this independent think tank focused on climate policy. Their report proposed numerous ideas for transitioning the world to the world's economy to a zero carbon emission system. So in their paper, if you decide to take it out, take a look, we'll link it below. But in their paper, they make it very clear that it is no easy task, as the effort required to transition the world's economy to this zero carbon emission system would, quote, be akin in scale to the World War II emergency mobilization. So the amount of effort needed to transition the world's economy to a zero carbon emission system would be massive. Like the logistical nightmare, a lot needs to be done, which is why Greta Thunberg, I think I'm probably pronouncing her name wrong. I feel bad for not being able to pronounce her name properly.
It's Thunberg.
I think it's pronounced Thunberg, though.
It's T-H.
Yeah, but she's from...
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm probably... How do you say her name? Okay. Greta... How do you pronounce... Greta... Oh, yeah, it's Thun.
So I guess this is why Greta Thunberg is yelling at the world's political leaders saying, get off your asses, we need to get in shape.
She's another queen we stan.
She is another queen. She's not going this year to the world's climate summit because of COVID-19.
Yeah.
But
it's 2021 and COVID-19 is still here.
And we'll probably be here for a long time. Anyways,
back to the climate change issue.
The world's screwed. Anyway,
the world is on fire, guys. Okay, so do something about it.
We're laughing, but we're anxious.
Yeah.
But anyways, aside from like the massive scale endeavor that needs to go on to save the planet, there are other things that we consider on a regional or more individual level.
Yeah.
So, for example, moving towards more sustainable actions, such as diversifying the agricultural landscape with different crops. So rather than planting just like one type of plant, you plant a variety, which ultimately increases biodiversity, because rather than having one thing, there's many. Yeah. Protecting natural areas, growing native and native wildflowers in gardens and parks to promote, I'm going to say that sentence again. Oh, so basically what also can be done is growing native wildflowers in gardens and parks to provide food and home for pollinators. So make them not homeless anymore, give them food, prevent them from going extinct. And other things that can be done is reducing the use of pesticides and promoting alternative forms of pest control. And these are all valid ways of mitigating the effects of pollinator declines and biodiversity loss caused by human-induced climate change. I keep saying human-induced because it is. It's not just climate change, it's human-induced.
You don't think you're at fault? You are.
Yep, we've made it a lot worse.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess... just to summarize, to conclude this all, right, is that to conclude, there's basically, I'm going to take this part out because the ending's not relevant. I'm not going to say that part. That's it, I'm done.
Basically, what Sonia is trying to tell us is that the world is on fire.
Mm-hmm.
It's going down. Go and kind of talk to your, political leaders, not even like at a federal level, but like provincially, or like talk to your mayor, Frank Scarpitti. Go talk and like talk about preserving these, you said, areas with like native plants and stuff.
Yeah, like plant native plants in your area, not ones that are invasive.
Yeah. So, like, protect those areas, and, you know, if you're looking for something more in a personal, like, personal responsibility, again, like, single-use plastic. Like, I'm pretty sure you can find multiple ways in, like, reducing that and avoiding plastic in general. Like, bring a, reusable bag to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Get a water bottle. Yeah. Get those reusable straws.
Mm-hmm. And there's also so much that can be, sorry to cut you off there, but, you don't even have, like, if you're not comfortable talking to a political leader in your community, there's so many things that you can do on an individual level, like volunteering with different organizations. Here in Ontario, like, I personally, in high school and even now, I've had the opportunity to volunteer with different environmental organizations in the community. But, like, a simple Google search, you come across so many. Like, even during the pandemic, if you're not able to do it in person, there's also things that you can do online in terms of advocacy work and science communication and stuff like that.
Yeah, and definitely you can use social media to continue raising awareness, because I know, like, there's a lot of issues going around in the world, and using your platform to educate others about this can really go a long way. Mm-hmm. And cool. I think that kind of concludes this week's episode.
I think it does. Janine, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sonia, for having me.